And good evening. It is Intuitive Soul Radio with your host, Lori Houston. And this evening we are blessed with having Bart Smit. Bart has been working professionally as a spiritual educator and deep trance channeler for the past over 20 years. He spends much time in trance and experiences different states of consciousness and has gained a wealth of knowledge about very subtle states. Dr. Williams, who is channeled by Bart, serves as Bart's teacher and beloved mentor, who has guided him and helped him to understand these subtle realms. Dr. Williams is pure consciousness and has been liberated from the cycle of birth and death. Through personal study and Dr. Williams' teachings, Bart has come to a deep understanding of the psychological characteristics of each of the chakras and the dance of inner liberation. Well, Bart, it's always fun to have you in the studio.
Welcome. Thank you very much. Thank you.
So this has been an interesting evening because we're not sure exactly what we're going to talk about, but we're going to talk about one of the questions that came in, which is, you know, there's an anxiety that's happening in the planet, really, right. And especially in North America. And some of it has to do with financial, but, you know, it's almost like there's this push, a deep push within all of us to really get somewhere. Like it's hard to explain, but it's like everything is speeding up so quickly.
It is.
So let's talk about the changes that are going on.
You know, I think an overall...
Closer?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'll get closer to all of you. I think the world is changing. You know, I think that we can talk about, you know, 2012 and the ending of 2012, or we can talk about are we all awakening and that this is happening at such a vast pace that from one week to another to the next month, we are learning so much more about ourselves that we didn't necessarily contemplate the week before. We're all feeling a deep sense of urgency. And so the basic principle, the basic question that many of the yogis and many of the siddhas keeps asking, who are we and where are we going? And these are very significant questions. You know, who am I? And so to say, well, you know, I'm a spiritual being is a great thing to say. But who am I? So what's happening is that the physiological makeup of what makes us is beginning to change. So we look at last year, we talked about the egoic self and we talked about the ego. And it was a big year of deception and the presidency coming out of power. And so if you really look at, you know, there was a real rising between the darkness and between the light, the deception of a culture. You know, the largest country of our, you know, that exists, or the most influential country, the United States, was waking up and saying, we don't want this anymore. So then it's great to say, okay, so we don't want this anymore. And then all of a sudden, okay, so what now? What kind of leader? So it's almost in the sense that we're now back to the basic principle. Are you the change, the world that you're looking for within the world? Are you going to make these changes within your personal life? Emotionally, psychologically, environmentally, it is now back onto ourselves. It's not based upon saying, you know, our leaders or our countries aren't doing their jobs. Everything is returning back to who am I? How do I fit in? What am I causing? What change am I causing? How am I changing my behavior? How am I changing my thoughts? So it's really about behavioral modification. How are we changing and adapting ourselves to a higher standard of existing? So if we look at the reptile brain, which is a lot of people understand about the reptile brain, and I think a lot of people are learning about the limbic system and how the limbic system very much is there to meant to sort of sing the praise of God. And we're supposed to be in this wonderful union with God, that we're feeling this wonderful wave, this panda, this pulse of the universe. And I think people have learned a lot more that the limbic system is really repeating repetitive fears. So what we're going at is that the limbic system is speeding up in its behavior, in our fears, in our anxiety, because we're changing. Part of that limbic system is changing because we're getting closer to who we are. We're getting closer to what you might say is our soul connection. But that scares the living bejeebus out of us. So we've got a lot of things happening. We've got things happening as far as environmentally that we haven't really dealt with socially or culturally. And our governments aren't informing what's happening and what our food supplies, what's happening in our oil and gas. And these are just outwardly basic survival. So on a primitive level, we're trying to survive. And previously, we didn't feel threatened around our basic survival. So we could repeat our addictions and within our thoughts and within our emotions. And now we're saying, don't want to do that anymore. I'm not happy being anxiety ridden, where that was okay a couple of years ago. That's all we knew. It was our identity. So we don't want to be plugged in anymore. But we don't know how to get unplugged when it comes to becoming self-sufficient, because we're codependent when it comes to food and when it comes to water, when it comes to gas, so our whole culture is going through this huge awakening. And everybody's looking for this great leader or for this great direction, but it really needs to derive from within yourself. And basically saying, okay, so why am I feeling so much fear? Well, because I'm beginning to get in touch with myself. And these moments where we experience this aha, or this deep sense of certainty, we're beginning to identify with, this is my soul. Where before, when we spoke about the soul, we cannot really identify the soul. So the mind doesn't believe in God, because the mind hasn't touched God. The mind can only believe in what it's touched. So if we touch God, if we touch a fireplace, if we touch this floor, if we touch a relationship, we can say, I love this person or she loves me. But if I can't touch you and I can't feel you, then how do I know? That's why we're always having such intimacy problems in most of our relationships, because we deny ourselves, because we don't really want to feel what's going on. And so that's why there's such a intimacy issues, because we actually feel with our hands. We feel with our bodies. We don't just feel with our mind. We feel with our bodies. And so we are gradually beginning to be aware of what we're thinking. We're beginning gradually to become aware of what we're feeling. We're gradually beginning to become aware how we're behaving. And we're saying, you know what, I really don't want to behave this way. Or, you know what, I'm not a really happy person. Or, I don't seem to have a lot of joy on a regular basis in my heart. And so what used to be okay isn't okay anymore. So to have some happiness is not okay anymore. Mm-hmm. To really find meaning is what is important. So is that partially anxiety because it's part of the death of the ego? That's true. It's a part of the death of the ego. It's a part of our egoic self. So we feel very much anxiety ridden. But it's also because we have no direction. We really don't know where we're going. Because we've given that power to government. We've given that power to outside sources. We don't really. So it's really about becoming that leader. You know, I think that my father has given me a great gift because he wasn't this compassionate leader. And in a lot of ways, that's what I do. I'm a very empathetic person and sympathetic person and very much lead people. And that isn't because it identifies who I am, because I've developed a part of my personality that I wouldn't have developed if my father would have been this great leader. Mm. How many musicians, you know, that their children become musicians? How many great leaders develop children that are great leaders? So in a sense, we usually develop the gifts that we didn't receive. And from there, so it's really about teaching ourselves. If I'm needing to learn to communicate better, then that's time to learn to communicate better. If it is time for me to learn how to be happier, then it's time to learn how to be happy. Because happiness isn't something that we just get. It's something that we have to earn. All these things we have to earn.
Talk about that, because I know that that's been said a few times. And I'm curious as to what that means, because, you know, obviously God isn't something outside of us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes when you say earned, it's like, you know, you're thinking that somebody's punishing us, like it's karma that we have no control over. Or,
you know, it's interesting that you talk about it, because it is partially to do with karma. Right. It's part to do with our family. It's partially to do with the city, because karma can be based upon a city. It could be based upon a family. It could be based upon a country. So because I travel a lot, you see people struggle with different things. You don't meet a lot of people that are really happy. Yeah. It's the reality. There are a lot of people that don't know how to sustain that. So it's like a note. So if I want to be happy, then I need to bring my mind not into a false perception of happiness, but I need to know what does it feel? Do I need to have courage to deepen my heart? So one, I need courage, because to be happy, I need to have the courage to feel. And when you find somebody who's very happy, that person knows how to play. So I can make a fool out of myself in public, and I don't have to be embarrassed about it, which is what a lot of people basically become, sticks in the mud, because they're so afraid of touching in public or expressing in public or playing. They cannot really embrace that. It's so foreign to them. I remember we got a kayak a couple of years ago, and about, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago. And we went out a lot in the beginning. And after a little while, which I think happens to a lot of people, oh, it's too cold or it's too this. And I realized that I was limiting myself. With other words, I had enough fun and that was enough. And it was time to go back to our regular routine, you know?
Yeah.
And so this year is a year of getting out. It's a year of kayaking. It's a year of getting new bikes. It is a year of, I'm going to change my behavior. I need to earn to play. I need to earn to be in that excitement. I need to earn to be in the moment and not go home and make dinner. And we don't get that unless we invest in it. Not sometimes, but we invest in changing how we behave.
So when you say earn, you're talking about
investment
and change, like making those changes. Absolutely. To do it.
Totally.
Conscious changes.
Totally. You know, you watch people in Puerto Vallarta and, you know, 6 o'clock, they're watching the sunset. They haven't even left the beach. You watch people at the beach and the beaches here around 4 o'clock. They're all packing up their children because they need to go home. They need to make dinner. They're getting ready. They're not in the moment. They're in a routine. So it's really about what routines, what behaviors, that's why it's called behavioral modification. What behavior, what am I projecting? If I walk into a room and someone, I say to someone, oh, how are you? And I would say, oh, the bus is late, and which is everybody. What are you projecting? What is the first thing you do and say? What are you projecting? What are you saying to the world, and what are you saying to yourself? And so what's happened, we have learned proper social etiquette, but we've never really said, could I be a person that could just be laughing out loud and not be embarrassed by laughing out loud? Could I be in the moment and play and make a fool out of myself? Could I spend the entire summer sailing, which is what I'm planning to do, and kayak and bike because I need to play? This is a year of getting into the heart. It is a year of playing. It's a year you cannot find the direction you need to go into if you don't play.
Right.
So it's a year where people are learning to overcome their depressions or their unhappiness or their doubts. And a lot of people have doubts, and a lot of people have depression, and a lot of people have uncertainty. And these answers don't come to you if you keep dwelling in the same energy. And I don't remember this book on behavioral modification, but it was a great book that really talked about that if we want change, it starts with our own behavior. And it starts with, what are we projecting? What are we thinking? What are we saying? What message do we think we're giving out? And what message are people receiving? And so it's really about questioning the entity of ourselves. And so I think it's a part because we're beginning to understand that the soul speaks in a depth of silence. The soul doesn't have emotions. The soul is a state of being. The soul doesn't communicate. The soul speaks in silence. So we're beginning to learn to behave differently. We're learning how to respond differently. We're learning how to make changes that is out of our comfort zone. And we're beginning to get glimpses of, you know, that felt pretty damn good. You know, when I just sat there and it was a great afternoon and I was drinking my coffee and I sat on the beach, and maybe I just need to learn to really appreciate that and change my behavior instead of just taking that for granted. It's about behavioral modification. What changes in our behavior, in our thinking, are we needing to examine?
Mm-hmm.
I think the world is going hell in the handbasket unless we make changes. And these changes are in the food in which we eat, to how we think. You know, as we move towards 2012, the luxuries that we are used to aren't going to be there. And those luxuries are gas and how we heat our homes. And so we are panicking because we are afraid of the change. Our country should be implementing environmental changes and not just sell a sexy green coyote treatment, you know, because they're selling sexy. They're not making a change. Every home in this country should get, you know, $20,000 worth of we need to change how we live, how we use energy. And energy is also within our hearts. So I think 2012 is about consciousness. It's about energy. It's about the energy in our mind, the energy in our heart, the energy in our cars, the energy. It is about energy. And so I think a lot of people talking about the ending, it isn't about the ending. Mm-hmm. It's about this dramatic change of how are we utilizing energy within our workforce, within our mind, in our behavior, in our cars, in our houses, because for the first time we're feeling threatened. We don't know we're threatened, but we're feeling it on a primitive level because we don't see the changes in our government and the world that gives us that sense of comfort. And we are too far along to stick our heads back into the sand, which is what we could. We are too far along because we're no longer accepted to have credit card debt because everybody wants to get out of credit card debt. Everyone is fed up with their own behavior. Everybody wants to be out of debt. Everyone wants to change their behavior. Everyone needs or has a deeper sense of trying to find a freedom that they haven't felt before. People are feeling trapped. They're trapped in their jobs, and it isn't just about their jobs. It's mm-hmm. entrapment because they're trying to find meaning. And that meaning all stems back to where does the energy of my life, where does my energy go? Am I putting out so much energy into my kids that I don't have any energy back? Or am I putting all my energy into playing with my kids, but I have no joy in my business or my professional life? And so it's really about examining how we behave and how we relate and how we conduct ourselves by trying to figure out what the next step is going to be, because frankly, I don't think anybody has the answer.
Mm-hmm. One of the questions was about the retreat in Puerto Vallarta, and Dr. Williams had given a talk, and it was on, you know, how to break karma. And one of them, you know, we've sort of talked about, it's, you know, becoming aware of your patterns. Mm-hmm. Then the second one is, you know, to respond instead of react. So mm-hmm. learning to get that. And then the third one was really about how to move into your heart. And you're touching on that. But, you know, part of that is through gratitude. Part of that is through seeing beauty in another or seeing love in another.
I think we're very afraid. I think as an overall culture, I think that people can be in the moment when it is safe. They can be in their heart. It's like a drive-through. And they can be very intimate in that particular moment, but they don't know how to maintain that level of intimacy. So I think it is not because I'm indicating that in general, people don't know how to be, people are afraid. People don't know how many of us had great fathers. No, not because we need to beat up all of our fathers or great mothers, you know, and it's not about trying to live in what we don't have and what we didn't have. How many leaders does this world have and this country have? Very few. Mm-hmm. So where are the great saints? Most of them are gone. So we're in a world of huge transition. So if I want the world, if I expect the world to be something, then I'm going to need to become that person that I want the world to be. So I think a lot of people have such deep dissatisfaction within relationships, within their jobs, or within their sexuality, because we skim the surface of what we're feeling because we're really afraid to get deep inside of what we're really wanting, because what happens if we get it and we won't be happy with it? So we would disappointment of it. Hmm. So I think we've learned how to be a society of consumption that doesn't move beyond our consuming of thoughts, our consuming of emotions, our consuming of fear. And we speak about change, and we speak about wanting to go much more deeper, but we don't know what that is like. And it's about taking a total risk. And people don't like risk. I mean, it's interesting because people behave differently. People say different things. You know, people will say, they expect certain responses, or they respect, or they're looking for certain reactions, but they are not supposed to be something else. If you look at someone like Guru Mai, Guru Mai is a great saint, and she could be in the moment and she could be just killing herself laughing. And a lot of people are just saying, you know, would just assume that a great saint would not be laughing. And all of a sudden she's laughing, and the moment, next moment she's completely serious again. It's because when you really begin to live in the heart, you can have all these ranges, and you can be all these different personalities. And a lot of people find conflict with one personality or the other personality, because being in that moment is being as authentic in that moment or in that time as we possibly can be. But we feel like we need to defend ourselves. And so if we look at how do I deepen this experience with my friends, in the average relationships where two people haven't done the work, one person needs to become on top and one person needs to go below. There's a control. There needs to be this very primitive. In every relationship, one person needs to be on top and the other one, you know, isn't submissive. Or one is passive and the other one is aggressive. Or the other one is on top. So there's always these dynamics that we're playing out that we're afraid to go deeper. And it's a part of our culture. It's a part of our tribe existence.
In the collective unconscious.
Unconscious. Yeah. So you can walk into a store, and if that storekeeper is going to be top dog, that storekeeper is going to be top dog. So we're always playing out top dog with everything around us. Either we're top dog or someone else is top dog. But we don't see it that way. We don't understand that we're actually really quite primitive in a lot of ways, and that we keep behaving the same kinds of, even though we're thinking we're quite advanced in our thinking and our behavior, but we're actually acting out very primitively. And so we're constantly offended when we're not top dog, and we feel totally in charge when we are top dog. I'm not talking about in every aspect of life, but if we just really talked about when do we feel really good because we're getting a lot of attention. When do we feel really good? Because we don't feel threatened. We're feeling good when we don't feel threatened. But how many times do we feel threatened by other people or other relationships? And so primitively, we keep shutting down because we're playing this primitive survival. The Dalai Lama made this comment about a story about a woman that, or a man that described how he was accosted by someone else. And he was looking for the Dalai Lama's interpretation. And the Dalai Lama's interpretation, which is sort of interesting because it's a similar interpretation that Dr. Williams gives. If somebody feels they need to be top dog, they must live a pretty sad existence. If somebody needs to challenge you, they must feel pretty insecure. When someone needs to feel it's okay to overstep boundaries and display their anger and their aggression, they must feel pretty vulnerable. So we get out of just judging people and judging each other and judging ourselves and really begin to say, how am I relating? How am I responding to this person? And not look at people, but that they have the sword that can slay us. And so we're not happy because we're afraid. Because we don't know how to be happy. Because we're acting in this very secure, safe place within our heart that has a range of maybe a mile, but we never go beyond that mile. And a part of earning is about daring to step out of that comfort zone for 10 minutes and then coming back into it. And most people, they need to judge you. That's, I think that's what happens a lot in some of the retreats, because people have a particular idea about themselves, where all of a sudden I become a part of them, or they become a part of me, or they project that I need to be this, or they project I need to be. People do this because they're aspects of ourselves. And if we start seeing that these are all aspects of ourselves, then we can grow and we can evolve. If I feel threatened by someone, or if I need to figure out why that person doesn't have that power. But so what within my primitive behavior, why am I guarding my heart? What do I need to do to overcome feeling so threatened by Bob or Mary? Or why does my brother invoke me? What's within him? He really is just a human being breathing like any. What is within me that creates such discontentment? So everything around us is a reflection of ourselves, but it's also how are we behaving. And so in order to shift, we need to look at our primitive responses and our primitive behaviors. And there are people that are always in charge, and they have great personalities, and that's a great way that they can cover their hearts. There are people that never know what they want because they never know what they want, and that's where they stay. And there are people that can make commitments, but they never make commitments to anything except the basics of life. So on a primitive level, we have all these different kinds of responses to life that we're not really aware of, but it's how we can maintain a secure existence within our heart. And I actually think that people are ready. I think that people are breaking and saying, I can be more vulnerable. I can be afraid. I remember doing a radio show years ago, and when I was driving up here, I was thinking about that. The woman that interviewed me was just really, really sweet. It was about 25 years ago. And I remember how unbelievably afraid and how unbelievably relaxed, because I'm not afraid of my inadequacy. So we feel inadequate because we're taught on a primitive level that we're inadequate. Where does that come from? Why does my brother have the ability that I feel infuriated by him? That why would I feel so inadequate? It's about my inadequacy. It's not about him. And so about karma is very similar. What are the missing links that we need to learn about ourselves? If I'm in debt and I keep imprisoning myself, then I must not love myself. And I might say I'm not making enough money, but why am I doing this? Would I not rather have freedom? Or have I become a product of my culture? And our culture dictates debt. Our culture dictates self-imprisonment. We imprison ourselves. We live in a world that has invisible walls or bars, because that's how the rich become rich and the poor stay poor. Why would someone pay 18.5% on a credit card? Now, let me tell you, I'm the first time I sold my house, I'm out of debt. It's the first time. I'm guilty of this as well, because I didn't want to be in debt anymore. Because even if you were to say, okay, so you owe $1,000 or $10,000 or $20,000, whatever the amount is, and even though you can take that amount and you can go to the bank and get a loan, why are we self-conflicting? What's happened in our culture? What are we doing? What are we buying? Are we buying our freedom, or are we buying materialism? Are we imprisoning ourselves? So we are taught to eat food that isn't healthy. We're taught to respond that isn't healthy. We've taught to make credit cards rich. We've learned to buy a TV whenever we want to. We've learned without consequences to our actions. And karma is learning about what consequences. Why am I creating this karmic debt? Why, at my age, am I not in a loving, fulfilling relationship? A lot of people are single.
A lot.
And these are amazing people, because they needed to be on their own to find out who they are. But at the same token, they're not willing to give it up because they don't have examples what it's like to be in a healthy relationship. They have no model for it because they've worked on themselves, but they don't have a model. So you have these phenomenal men and these phenomenal women that knew they needed to break the karma when it came to their husbands or their spouses or their abuse. And so they've made the shifts, they've done the therapy, but now they don't have the model. And so it's about earning. I'm going to have to make a risk and say, I'm going to go out with this woman or this man, and you know, he or she might not be the right one, but I need to try. I need to create it. And so this world is changing, but we don't know how to change with it. And that only comes from within. That isn't from without. And life at this stage only starts to make sense when we are really regularly meditating, because our senses and our mind are not making sense anymore. Things are speeding up. They're speeding up so rapidly. And that is not just based upon New Age. It's based upon it speeding up. Mm-hmm. We're reaching a pivotal point and a pivotal crisis. When I learned about, you know, California and how California is going to change and how California is going to have a mammoth earthquake and all these different things, years ago I thought, you know, there's all such exaggeration. What's going to happen? California is, you can feel it. Go to California, stand along the coast, and you can feel that California is in deep trouble. The United States pretty well bankrupted California. Everything looks great. Everything looks fine. California is out of water. California is going to run out of oil. California is going through a major crisis. And I'm not predicting. This is just reality. So we are nowhere near feeling that we're safe or the world is safe, because the world is going to go through some major changes. And we are going to have to re-examine where our food comes from, because it's going to become an issue. And that's not because I'm trying to create panic, because we're changing. It's all good. It's all for the better. We're not willing to do the same thing anymore. So we can say, okay, so we're running out of oil. I would say in less than 10 years to heat a home that's 5,000 square feet is going to cost you an absorbent amount of money. And unless you have some renewable energy, I would have to say to you, good luck. Mm-hmm. Is that based upon prediction or is that based upon reality? It's based upon reality. We are running out of oil. We are not going to be able to heat our homes. And when it comes to our lives, we better dump our homes. I dumped my home. I sold my home, not because my home wasn't a great home, because I knew I needed to make a change. I needed to move into a building that had thermal heating. I needed to create a change because I could not make that change in my home. Somebody else might be able to do it, but I just didn't. So in a sense, we're moving. Listen to what you're sensing. Listening to what you're feeling. If you need to change your home, change your home. Get smart. Get on the bandwagon. If you need a new car, don't get a new car. Get something that's going to carry you through until new technology is about to come around the corner, and it's going to come because we have no choice, because we won't be able to drive cars made that use oil or gas. So all these things is about changing our world. We're going to go back to communities where we've not really, and particularly Toronto, I'm very blessed because I have great friends, but Toronto is a very cold city. It's one of these cities where friendships and relationships, people are very different. And you can go to Montreal and it's a whole different story. Mm-hmm. You can go to Belgium and Holland, it's a different story. This is a very fragmented city and people feel very close and all of a sudden feel very isolated from friendships. And that's a part of the karma of the city, because the city has a lot of fragmentations, this culture and that culture, and not because all of that is wrong, but no one comes together. There's not one thing that brings this city together. And we feel that in friendships. There's a lot of people that are very lonely, and they're very beautiful people, but they feel very isolated, because that's what Toronto, in its own way, in its funny way. But if we look in the future, we are going to have community gardens that never existed before. We're going to have roofs of vegetables and gardens that never existed before. We are going to come together in a way that has never happened before. And people are going to come out of California, and people, there's going to be a shift, because people are realizing that their anxiety isn't just a fabricated anxiety. They're needing to make adjustments. And for some people in California, I have a lot of people, a lot of clients, and my best friend in California is moving because they feel it. And they cannot go to bed every night because they can sense it. Where previously, these things were all things that were things we talked about or silly predictions. But now it's beginning to physically materialize within our body. And our bodies are saying, create a change. Listen to the inner self. So in a lot of ways, we're getting closer to our soul, and we're listening to ourselves, and we are going to change how we use energy, how we use energy in our hearts, how we use energy in our minds, how we choose energy in our cars. We are forced to change as a culture, because having a bunch of toilets flushing and dishwashers and consuming water isn't a bad thing. But if we were recycling the water and we were changing the systems, which we're all capable of doing. So this isn't about water, and this isn't about oil, and this isn't about gas. This is all about how we are changing as human beings, because we're running out. And it also means that our environment is telling us we've used up our good luck, and it's time to look at where do we need to make change within ourselves. Because this superficial commercialism temporarily isn't working anymore. Relationships aren't working anymore because it isn't deep enough. They're not intimate enough. They don't have enough meaning, because we're tired of living at the surface. And we are needing to go into the ground and get our thermal heating, and we need to dig our soul into the ground and connect to who are we, and it's time to dig into the heart. It's time to look at what's happening in our world and how we relate to ourselves.
So talk about what does it mean to really like go into our heart? What does that mean? Like, what are you talking about? Are you talking about, you know, that vulnerability that you're saying, that, you know, just to not be afraid and to, but what do you mean?
It starts with that.
Yeah.
I think it starts with having the courage. I think it's first, I remember trying to speak to my dad when he was alive. And I could say that my father was very detached, and I could just simply say that he was an individual that was detached. I could say that my father was narcissistic. I could say none of these things are an adequate statement, but we all have different kinds of parents. We have parents that are detached. We have parents that are narcissistic. We have parents that are... There's a lot of mental illness in this world, You know, more so than we even understand. So people generally live in fear. So if our father cannot make up his mind or doesn't know what he wants, it doesn't really matter if he's narcissistic. None of these things matter. What matters is that we've never been encouraged to talk to each other. So we don't know how to talk to each other. We can say, I want this and I want this, but we project onto each other all the time. Mm-hmm. And so this projection of our own fear, why do we feel inadequate talking to our boss? Why do we feel so guilty? Why do we feel so bad when we come into customs and the custom guy says our passport? I mean, what do we do? I mean, boy, let me tell you, I mean, it's sort of silly that we feel so inadequate crossing the border. It's almost like we've done so. Where does that come from? A policeman that stops us. Why do we feel like we've done something wrong? Because the insurance companies blame us, because there's always a consequence, because we feel inadequate. We've done something wrong. So when it comes to really wanting something, we don't think it's within our reach. And so we don't think it's possible to deepen this relationship. And so it starts off with, if you travel a lot, learn to chant Om Namah Shivaya when you're standing in front of the customs guy. Because you need to get to a point that you'd use every opportunity where you feel inadequate, that you feel in the center. And so part of what I did for years, because I felt so afraid and so inadequate or so threatened or fearful, every opportunity that threatened me or felt that my boss had power over me or an emotion had power over me, I would literally chant Om Namah Shivaya. I would literally say, I am well, I am whole, I am in my power. I would literally burn in my own heat, in my own fear, while that person doesn't really know anything of what I'm doing. And I just burn through my fear. I would literally dive into the pool of my own fear. And that's how we burn that karma. It's also how we burn our own fears and our own inadequacy. We need to burn that. So I need to be. I need to have the courage to walk into my heart. I need the courage to say, you know, I need to talk to Bob or George or my boss or my sister, and I might not get the response that I'm looking for. And I might not finish the relationship or the conversation in which I would like, which I think is what's happened to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. They have a particular agenda, and when the conversation doesn't turn the way that they would like it to, they feel it has been redundant. And that's why we keep punishing ourselves, because we never really stop making it about the end result. Even if you talk to Bob or Mary and they got you or didn't get you, work through your fear. Stand there and really stay in your own center as much as you can. And that's how you burn your fear.
So embrace the fear. Get into it.
Embrace the fear. Stand in it. Steepen it. I mean, I don't care if you're terrified, you got diarrhea 5 minutes later, like, you got to stand in it yourself. It's the only way to do that. Because the heart has all these layers. The heart is actually where the entire universe. It's interesting because the heart is what I'm talking about teaching next year. It's all about the dance between the heart and the soul. And so we don't see the soul unless we walk into the heart. And so what a lot of people do is they create, oh, hi, how are you? And they create all these niceties, but they never step. You need to feel your deepest inadequacy and keep standing in it until it's burned. Stand in your deepest fears until it's burned. Stand in your deepest anger until it's burned. Because I will tell you, if there was somebody that was angry, it was me. If there was somebody that was afraid, it was me. People that have experienced abuse usually are very frightened people. And I certainly was somebody that was abused. So when it comes to real physical, like really deep, extreme physical violence, that was pretty well me. So if you looked at me the wrong way, I would rip the carpet out from underneath you. If you wouldn't return something I bought, I would literally rip you apart. So what happens, we need to figure out not just why do we do what we do, stand in your own inadequacy. Stand in your fear. Stand in your, and these are layers. So the heart has all these layers that we walk through. It's like a chamber. And so if I, women need a level of intimacy before they engage in sexuality. Is that because they need to feel their heart before they engage? Or is this a chemical reaction? A man has a chemical reaction in his brain that says, woohoo! Seriously. Mm-hmm. It's a whole different ballgame. Women want to prolong orgasm. Men just want to go, woohoo! Is that because that's how we are trained? It's how we're trained. Men learns how to, you know, chop wood, get it over with. Women want to keep the fire going so they don't have to relight it tomorrow morning. So how we women think and feel, men either think or feel. So the heart actually is capable of both. So how has it come that a woman's heart... So brain cells lie within the heart. And I think a lot of people don't really understand that there's also brain cells within the intestine. So there's a consciousness. And have we overlooked that consciousness within our heart? Absolutely. We're not used to it because we don't see that the heart has any value. We see it that, okay, I love him and that's really great, but we only look at it as a muscle. But there is actually a spiritual heart. And that spiritual heart is consciousness. So is there brain cells within our heart? Absolutely. So does that heart mean that the heart is going to keep me at the edge of that water and I'm never going to be in the center? Totally. So women say to men constantly, I need more intimacy before I climax. Man goes, yeah, whatever, and think that they've done what they needed to do. But if you actually if you really think about it, it's because that's what men are trained to do. How many men actually would like the intimacy and have that intimacy before any, once they learn, but most of them don't. Because it's a part of our primitive culture. It's easier for a man to categorize what he thinks or what he feels. Because most women, that's why men and women don't understand each other. Because a woman can go from thinking to feeling, a man goes like, I don't know what you're wanting. And so they go around and around and around because they're speaking about two different things at the same time. And the heart is this it isn't about where we feel all this mushy and all this greatness. It's where we can actually hold a level. It's like an opera singer that can hold a note. So it's like the same thing when we talked about spiritual merit. The heart has layers where we have to earn the attainment of intimacy and the sustainment of consciousness. So it's like an opera singer that learns to maintain a note with such perfection that when she sings that note, there is a discipline, a focus, and years of practice that created that sound. And the heart demands that respect and that consciousness, and that temple of the heart doesn't open up unless you understand the basic principles of the consciousness of the heart. Because the heart keeps you on the outside, where we feel that we are feeling, but we are responding. We are chemically reacting to something. We're not feeling. And so, when the heart sees the commitment, when the heart, the spiritual heart, not the physical heart, but when the heart sees that you've stood in your fire of fear, you've stood in your fire of your depression, you've stood in your fire of I don't know, but you're standing in your own caca and you burn that away, we enter into a deeper, into what's called, there are several layers of the heart, and we enter, there's 108 streams of consciousness that go into the heart. Like there's 108 malas, and there's 108 mantras, and there's 108 upanishad. There's 108 streams of consciousness that goes into the heart. And one of them goes directly into the center where the shushumna, where the kundalini travels along. And that center, we cannot get there only through pure consciousness. So this year, in any retreat, and it's a very good example, you cannot just take an audience and say, okay, we're going to do ABCD. They've just come off a plane. They need to get unplugged. You need to shift an audience. We need to make a decision. And so we make decisions, or I make decisions, on, okay, so this day, this afternoon, we're going to take them here, and then we're going to take them here. So what actually happens is that when we experience a deep level of intimacy, we've invoked it. It's called invocation. We invoked that. In that moment, we could do that. We might not be able to do it 5 minutes later, But in that moment, we've invoked something. We've invoked consciousness. We don't really know what that means as a human being. We're only beginning to understand what that means. So we experience something, but we don't understand how we invoked it. Just as we can invoke the Kundalini, but we don't really understand what that means. Do we command it? Because we don't have the language for it. But if we reach levels of consciousness or levels of evolution, we can start invoking these consciousness, these states. And so you can say 3 years ago, oh, well, you know, I need to be compassionate towards the lowest denominator. So the lowest denominator is a person who's afraid. She's never been on a plane. She's never left a country. She is a new city. So I need to cater to her. And that works. But you see, then when you grow and evolve, then you realize, if I can invoke these states and I'm learning how to invoke these states, can I shift that audience in 3 days, what took me 7 days? Is that because I have courage and I have the merit of holding an intent to such purity and such oneness, and that fear doesn't even enter into it because the soul is in charge, not the mind, but where the soul is so ignited and engaged that the level of pointedness, the one, in a sense, you could almost hear a needle drop, the intensity, but not from an intense position, but the one pointedness of invoking is where the heart responds. And the issue was very profound, because as we entered, particularly into the third day, that day, many things happened. And what had happened in the experience was so profound, but my mind couldn't even comprehend it, because the entire audience shifted with me from one realm into the next. And that's unimaginable, because you just say, listen, I'm just this person going and doing this, but am I actually capable more? So am I this person that says, gee, are we spiritual beings, but we're actually human beings? And are we learning to what it's like to be a spiritual being, having spiritual experiences, instead of identifying that we're a spiritual being having emotional experiences? So could there be Bart that sits in an audience, but Bart that simultaneously has earned a spiritual merit to hold an entire concentration within his own heart, and the entire audience moves within the pulse of that heart? It's like holding an intent. Is that possible? As human beings, we're beginning to understand it's possible. Where a year ago, we might not even understand what that means. So does that mean that it's not the human part, but the spiritual part of what's awakening inside of us, and we don't necessarily always understand what that means? Absolutely. So what's interesting is where you watch yourself. When we actually go beyond the fears of the heart, we can actually watch ourselves. Watch ourselves. It's like the witness watching the witness watching the witness. It almost sounds like a silly thing. But it's like saying, here is Bart in his experience, shifts out of his human element, moves purely into the temple of the heart, enters into the temple of the heart. Everyone shifts with that. Everybody comes back. The human nature of Bart kicks back in. And we come out of meditation, I stand up and I fall to the ground and I start to cry. Is it because my mind just kicked into what I just experienced? Absolutely. Intimacy is not just, or the heart is not just, an emotional experience. And so we keep rating intimacy as how emotionally vulnerable we are. But intimacy of the heart isn't about the range of emotions. It's a state of consciousness. And we've defined the heart as emotions and the range of emotions instead of states of awareness and states of consciousness. I don't know if that all makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Last question, and there were a couple of them. It's really regarding discernment between, you know, whether it's our soul or whether it's our ego. And we got one question that was pretty elaborate. You recently discussed the soul and how we need to connect to and listen to what the soul is telling us, mm-hmm. to be in tune with the rhythm of the soul.
Right.
How do we know that what we are feeling is from the soul and not the ego? For example, we may hear you discuss how people are listening to their soul and selling their house or traveling to Africa or packing up and moving to a different country.
Mm-hmm.
We can see some friends doing just this. And then we have a similar thought or feeling. How do we know that this is not the ego cleverly disguised as a soul telling us something? Maybe we want to be like everyone else and to decide to do something drastic when really it isn't our purpose to do this.
Mm-hmm.
We try to jump on a boat, but we missed the boat or took the wrong boat. How do we have the discrimination or the discernment to distinguish between the two?
Good luck. disclaimer. Because the ego has a particular purpose and outcome, and the soul does not. The ego says, oh my God, I'm going to do this, I'm going to sell my house, I'm going to have this much money, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to... And so the ego... The soul speaks in the deepest form of silence. So, I live in a great house in a beautiful neighborhood. I could have converted that house. I could have renovated that house. I looked at all these options. And every day, for a period of time, I'd wake up and say, just get out, just get out, just get out. So that wasn't an emotion that says, get out. It was just like, I'm in the wrong place. It isn't about the ego goes, I want you to get out because you're going to get this money and I want you to get out and we're going to go here. Because it is a sense. It's a sense of being. It's not an emotional act. So it's right. Sometimes we end up in the wrong boat. So, and I get that. So I sell my house. And as I sell my house, I have no place to live. Well, that was pretty stupid. Here I'm going to Mexico. I've got no place to live. Absolutely. Did I take the wrong boat? I didn't. Because I didn't settle. All these houses, all these opportunities. So when the soul speaks, you have to give up your need to satisfy yourself emotionally. And I don't know if that makes sense to people. But the ego says, oh, we're going to get this house. Or we're going to get this penthouse. Or we're going to do this. Or we're going to do that. And so we compromise. We can feel, you know, the inurgency, then you know the ego is in charge. If there's an urgency, you know the ego is in charge. You know it needs to come from a deep sense. So we say, okay, so you know what? We're going to put everything into storage, and I guess we'll do whatever we need to do, because unless I get a deep sense, a sense, not an emotion, but a deep sense. So 2 weeks before we get on the plane to go to Puerto Vallarta, we found a home that I'm telling you, the building that I live in, God resides there. I mean, I could not be more lucky. The guy that bought this building drilled something like 35 feet deeper because a feng shui master told him to dig into the rock to ground the building. And I'm telling you, you walk into my building and you walk into my unit, which has 27 feet of glass, there the presence of God. The sun comes into my house every morning. Every morning I brush my teeth, and in the bathroom I see the sun and I see the boats. Mm-hmm. I'm connected to nature. So was something wrong with my house? No, because I needed to breathe. I wasn't breathing. I needed to be in light. I needed to be in a building that was grounded. I needed to be in a building that was green. I needed to be in a building where the roof had trees growing on it. I needed to be in an environment that I could breathe, because I was dying in my home. I was depressed where I was living. I was jumping on a plane every 2 months because I needed the sun. And so I think a lot of people live in the wrong kinds of environments, or the wrong homes, or the wrong, because it doesn't. And for me, I just couldn't do it anymore. I was ready to pack up. And so is that based upon emotional decisions? Or is that based upon a sensory, we're sensing, not feeling, but sensing And that's what the soul does. It gives us senses, not just feelings. The ego gives us feelings, and the soul gives us senses.
I want to ask what that means, but we're running out of time.
All right.
So, again, always a pleasure. Always very honored.
Señora.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I'm sure you'll be back soon.
I will be back.
In the fall.
I will be back.
All right.
All right.
Thank you
very much.